Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Chow versus Guinite Corporation. Mr. Gottlieb.
May it please the court. The record in this case establishes, without dispute, first, that Guinite exposed its employees to respirable silica in amounts that exceeded the permissible exposure limit, and second, that there were controls that it could have used that would, in all likelihood, have avoided these overexposures.
I have a question about the record and the controls, which is, to what extent in anything you're relying on, meaning the report or the cross-examination, does one find a statement along the following lines? If you implement these controls, you will meet the PEL levels or be below those levels or anything. Is there a statement like that?
Well, there's the party's agreement that the control that Guinite was in the process of implementing at the cost of nearly $3 million would in all likelihood achieve the PEL for three of the
right,
four
but
locations.
But that's future-oriented, and companies can't say, trust us, we're about to do something good.
But we agreed that method, once implemented, would likely achieve the exposures. And this was also one of the methods that the health response team recommended that they implement. So there was method. There was that statement. There was also the statement that rotating employees would have likely achieved compliance with the PEL at the fourth location.
Right, and I would assume it's your position that saying compliance with PEL is a way of saying X, whatever the appropriate measurement is for this silica ambient concentration. It is a quantitative
statement. Achieving compliance with the PEL is certainly sufficient, is what they were required to do. This relates, I think, to the Commission's quantification requirement.
Right. You know,
and that rises as an issue for the Commission to decide only when there's a dispute over whether there's a specified control will be effective for a particular operation. Here, as I said, the parties agreed that the one control that they were in the process of implementing would be effective. The second, the administrative control of rotating employees, the parties agreed, would be effective. Third, the parties agreed that a clean air island would be effective. Motley explained that a clean air island engulfed the employee in clean air, and therefore he wouldn't be exposed to respirable silica. Leroy Cater, Guinite's facilities engineer, agreed that a clean air island was effective, and that, in fact, Guinite uses this method to make control exposures elsewhere in the plant.
Is it the identical? I mean, the dissenting commissioner mentions that also. Is it an identical technology in the other parts of the plant?
Based on what the record reveals, yes. I mean, they identify as clean island and said, yes, we use this. We have to temper the air, but we do that, and you can do that. It's a little bit of a pain. We wanted to do, we wanted to get the dust out of the whole plant. As a general matter, and that's why they didn't want to rely on that for the particular controls. But it was certainly feasible to do that and do that until they had implemented their
right
control.
Let me ask you a question about standard of review. I mean, normally, of course, we review the commission's decision. We have deferential substantial evidence review, and the commission says, as you well know, that they conclude that the evidence of record is insufficient to prove that the controls that the secretary was suggesting would produce a significant reduction in airborne respirable silica in the foundry, and then there's a footnote. How do you get around that? I mean, why should we not defer to that statement?
For a couple of reasons. First, they relied on the fact that there wasn't any expert evidence to support technological feasibility, and that is just plain wrong. The record shows that the health response team members were expressly designated and accepted as experts. They plainly provided, the health response team generally and the witnesses plainly provided opinion testimony based on their specialized knowledge. Guinite stipulated to the admission of their report cross-examine them on their qualifications, the methods they used to produce the report. There just isn't any basis for saying that these were not experts. So we and that affected their finding that the record evidence was insufficient. In addition,
so you're saying that was like a legal mistake, or what kind of mistake was that?
Well, it's certainly a legal mistake to the extent that they took into account the fact that they were expressly designated and accepted as experts. You know, if it could be that they just overlooked that, in which case maybe it's a factual question as to whether there was factual basis for explaining that they were experts. But not only the pretrial, but the record itself shows that they were experts. There was never a Daubert challenge. There was never a challenge to their qualifications. The second legal error that we think the commission occurred that precludes you just deferring to that as a factual matter is the quantification requirement. If there's evidence that the exposures are likely to be reduced below the Pell, there's no legal basis for requiring additional evidence as to how much is quantified. Achieving exposure necessarily quantifies the level of reduction that's expected. And as I started out, there's undisputed evidence. Parties agreed that there were methods that they could have used to achieve control. To the extent there is a quantification requirement, and we think the commission also erred in imposing too high a level of burden, certainty as to what had to be, what the controls would produce.
I have an irrelevant question. How large is Greenite?
I'm sorry?
How large is this Greenite Corporation?
The record shows there were 300 employees at this facility.
So it's pretty big.
Right.
These fines seem ridiculously low. And didn't they cut down one of your fines to $40,000?
They cut down one of the fines.
Why didn't you appeal that? I just don't understand. These fines seem... I mean, because, you have people actually got silicosis, and you have, you have obvious deliberate foot dragging on their part. What's the point of a case like this if you're just going to fine them a few thousand dollars? They obviously make... It's obviously more profitable to them to delay several years complying with your... with your rules, and then pay, what is it, $95,000?
Well, we didn't appeal the penalty. It's an abuse of discretion standard.
Are there norms about these penalties or something?
I'm sorry?
Are there norms about these penalties, or is it just purely discretionary?
Well, it's discretion, largely discretion. There are factors that they have to look at.
But is it a percentage or something? Or
There's no percentage of their income or anything like that, or their revenues.
So how does one decide that $40,000 is the right sanction rather than what's the maximum?
The maximum was $70,000.
No, what's the statutory maximum?
It was $70,000.
$70,000? Is that per violation?
$70,000 per violation is the maximum for willful or repeat violation.
Really?
Yeah. And is a violation something that happens every day, or is a violation a course of conduct, or?
They have no sentencing guidelines.
Right.
It can be every day. I mean, they generally don't do it every day.
The only time I've seen you do it every day is when somebody dies because there's a violation,
yeah,
something like that.
But I mean, we didn't appeal the penalty. We think it's an important case, regardless of the fact that the penalty
was reduced. I understand you're concerned about the way the expert evidence was treated. I understand. I'm not criticizing you. Yeah. I just wondered why these penalties were so mild. As I said, it wasn't relevant. It's just curiosity.
And getting back again to the questions about the initial questions of the judge about... the significant how much reduction was shown. I mean, the uncontroverted evidence is that the various control methods laid out in the report would effectively reduce exposures. In context, we think that the only way to read that is that it would achieve the Pell. But they have to implement all feasible controls, even if it won't achieve the Pell, if the reduction can be characterized as quote significant. And we think the commission plainly misread the report to say, well, effectively reducing exposures doesn't mean that it's going to be a significant reduction. These were controls that were proven to be effective elsewhere. There's absolutely no evidence that they wouldn't be effective at this plant. And that's why we...
Yeah, it's pretty hard to say that employee rotation isn't technologically feasible. It's not like you're building some elaborate...
Well, again, it was they agreed. In fact, they brought out that evidence. I mean, OSHA doesn't generally OSHA prefers engineering controls. The standard allows administrative controls, so you know we accept that.
And your least favorite is these individual, you know, hoods or whatever
The respirators can only be used if you can't achieve the PEL with the use of engineering or administrative controls.
Right.
You want to reserve the rest of your...
Yeah, unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gottlieb. Mr. Mann?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Robert Mann. I'm here representing Gunite Corporation. I would like to address two points that was raised by counsel a moment ago. I think counsel was mistaken in saying that we had agreed to the expertise of Mr. Motley and Mr. Haythorne, the two people from the HRT. We did not agree to their expertise. What they are referring to is an answer to an interrogatory that they provided early on in the proceeding where they listed those gentlemen as experts, but then they didn't call them as witnesses. So I don't think it's fair to say that we agreed to their expertise.
But did you object to the interrogatory? You cross-examined. You know, this whole thing is done so, I don't know, I want to say sloppy or something, but they said that in the record, and you don't really take them on about it. And then there are these stipulations, and then all of a sudden, out of left field, the commission suddenly decides that their evidence isn't sufficiently expert to count. How can that be?
Well, I think the problem with the so-called expert testimony was they didn't quantify the results.
But see, that's what I don't get at all. If you look at the commission's opinion, for example, at appendix page 7, there's this chart that shows what the PEL is in milligrams per cubic meter for various positions. Obviously, the PEL is a little bit different where they are in their measurements. These are all numbers. And if you say you're going to reach the PEL, you have effectively said you're going to reach a number.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. But the problem with the silica PEL is that it varies by the percentage of silica in the dust. So the PEL will vary moment to moment, day by day, as the dust levels change and as the amount of silica in the dust changes. So taking the point of the rotation of employees, for example, that would work only if the dust level in the silica level in the dust...
What do you mean the PEL varies? I mean, OSHA has established a level that's safe, and of course the amount varies in the air depending on whether this mold has just been... you know, had all the sand shaken off of it or vibrated off of it or not. But I don't understand what you're saying when you say the PEL varies.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, the PEL is based on a calculation. The calculation is the equation 10 divided by 2 plus the percentage of silica dust in a sample of dust. So that if the percentage of silica dust is 1%, that makes the PEL lower, or higher rather. If the percentage of silica is 10% or 16%, it would vary. It would cause the PEL to vary. And if you would look at the test results, for example, over a period of time, you'll see that the percentage of silica in the samples that have been taken varies from 1.4% all the way up to 16%, and that can vary on a day-by-day basis. So,
Look, the citation is, or let me just say this. There is an amount of silica that a person inhales that becomes medically dangerous to them, which is why your company had people coming down with silicosis, which is a very nasty disease. And so, for example, in this chart on Appendix 7, they have a sample date. There's a PEL. There's an actual reading. Other people have also taken these readings, and there is perhaps, as you say, some relative point, but it refers to a specific measuring result. And so if the people testify that taking these preventative measures, whether it's clean air islands or whether it's just rotating the employees, which seems awfully easy, then you will be below the Pell. You're saying something. Otherwise, the Pell itself doesn't mean anything, and you're not attacking the fact that there's a Pell.
Well, there's no evidence in the record, Your Honor, to indicate that a clean air island would achieve a particular Pell. And as a matter of fact...
But your opponent says that you agreed that implementing these technologies and also implementing the technologies that Gunite was in the middle of doing over a long period of time was going to achieve the Pell. Why were you bothering to do anything if there are no such thing as Pells?
We did not agree that the Clean Air Island would achieve anything. We did not agree
You didn't like the Clean Air Island because you'd have to heat and cool the air.
Well, and that's a feasibility question. Because if you have a clean air island, you're blowing air down on somebody in an environment that is variable in terms of the silica content. What we did was equip an employee with a hood that provided clean air into the hood.
So and you didn't even require them to wear it. I thought that was wild. That
well, we
you
did,
encouraged.
We did require them to wear it in the cases that are before this court. We did not appeal from the decision of the commission in regard to the case where the employee chose not to wear the equipment. We didn't appeal that.
I have a question similar to what I asked Mr. Gottlieb. As I understand, but correct me if I'm wrong, all that's at stake in the matter under appeal is $27,000. Is that correct?
In dollar terms, that's correct, Your Honor.
So there are other terms? What are the other terms?
Well, the other terms would be the question of the method of abatement. if for example, I suppose, the question of if the commission was wrong, then the question of abatement would perhaps vary. I don't know. This is a case that we talked about conditions back in 1998, and the company.
So
has
why
changed.
Do you fight it if nothing's at stake? But
well, we were dragged into this fight, Your Honor.
No, I mean you can always go to the commission and say, look. I mean, go to the Department of Labor and say, look. You want the extra $27,000, would cost us five times as much to litigate it, so okay, well, here's your $27,000.
Well, I don't want...
Is there anything more at stake?
Your Honor, to that
point...
Is it
that you're clinging to the respirator? Is that the idea?
No, we're not clinging to the respirators. We abhor the respirators.
So if you lost this case, what changes would you have to make, if any, in what you're doing now in 2005?
I don't believe there would be much to be done in addition to what's been done between 1998 and now, frankly, Your Honor. The company has changed ownership several times, and there's an entirely new management, and so it's all different. But I think the government's interest in this case has to do with the commission decision.
Oh, no, I understand.
On the expertise.
I understand.
The expertise,
I don't understand your interest.
Not the money. The money, in fact, well, I don't want to discuss settlement discussions, but the money is not the issue here. We chose not to appeal. And we got handed a pretty stiff penalty and an abatement order. And that's the critical part, as you can understand, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Curiosity. Okay. Thank you. So, Mr. Gottlieb, do you have anything further?
I think I can be brief. Regarding the counsel's statement that they didn't agree to the expertise of Motley and Hawthorne in the health response team. We also referred to their pre-hearing statement in which they expressly said they could give opinions on the technological feasibility of controls. We think that's an admission or an acceptance of our designation of them as experts.
How strictly do you follow the rules of evidence? I mean, obviously, if it were in a district court and somebody said, yes, we agree they can give opinions, there would be an implication that they were experts, but how far do you follow things like the federal rules of evidence in these hearings?
Well, according to these commission rules, the federal rules of evidence do apply.
They do apply.
In addition, I mean, they did oppose one of the other experts,
They moved to exclude his testimony. They didn't move to exclude Motley and Halfman's testimony. In addition to acknowledging, they acknowledged that they could provide opinion testimony on technologically feasible controls. They said, well, but you can't testify as to how much they were overexposed on the day of the inspection because they weren't there. And also, they stipulated to the admission of their report. And it's clear from the record that this... The report was to serve in lieu of their direct testimony. It was the stipulation was that the report would be admitted and they could be cross-examined. That would have been during the direct would have been when they would have been formally qualified as an expert, and we didn't do that because of the stipulation that the report was in.
And they were in fact cross-examined, right?
They were cross-examined on their qualifications and the methods that they used for producing the report. Regarding counsel's statement that they didn't agree that the Pell would be achieved by use of the Clean Air Islands. Leroy Cater specifically said, Clean Air Islands are probably effective. And this is appendix page 491. I don't question that. And they serve a purpose. And in page 484 of the appendix, he explicitly said, we use them elsewhere in the plant. So they clearly agreed that a Clean Air Island was an effective means of controlling the exposures. And Motley's testimony that it encloses the employee in clean air establishes that the employee is not breathing contaminated air. He's breathing clean air. And that's we think, establishes the Pell. And what's at stake is, as the council acknowledges, there would be a binding abatement order to implement feasible controls, the controls at the work sites that are at issue. And that's what's missing in this case as far as gunite is concerned. In addition, the secretary does have more broader concerns about the commission ruling against us on issues that were just not before them. And, you know, the secretary needs to be able to prepare and present her case based on what it recognizes is in dispute and present the case accordingly. And those are the reasons.
Well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you.
Next case for argument, Mattinson versus Baxter, Mr. Whitehead.